through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We get a chance today, Jake, not once. Not just once, but twice, to hear from Seahawks head coach Pete Carroll. He was on with Danny and Gallant this morning, Salk filling in for Paul. Both he and Danny got a chance to talk to the head coach for about 10 minutes, asked him questions about Jamal Adams, where he wants to see improvement. We're going to tell you guys everything he said right now. And then also later today at 1 p.m., Pete Carroll is going to have another press conference, this one with reporters. So he's going to get more questions there. And we are going to take you there live. So you're going to hear twice everything you need to know, the latest information you need about the Seattle Seahawks from the mouth of the head coach. So let's go ahead and get started. Actually, Jake, I forget this every time. Why do I do that? Because we want to give you money, literally give you money. And here's what we're doing.
It's just because you want to keep it yourself.
It's
that's really what it comes
fact,
down to.
And you need to keep it on the DL, Jake, because that's actually illegal and violates a lot of prize rules. And so you cannot just say it on air. We'll talk about
like
that later.
Laws.
Who really cares? Here's, okay, fine. You guys can have the money today. We've got another chance for you to win a $250 Visa gift card during Four Down Territory. That starts at 12:15. So listen for your chance and we'll have directions. We'll make it really clear. If you have questions in the moment, you can text in 710-710, Mac and Jack's text line. It's a really awesome opportunity. Thanks to Genuine Auto Glass. And that's a $250 Visa gift card you can spend on anything.
Whatever you're not limited. Your heart desires.
If you want to go drop $250 at Applebee's, if you want to drop $250 at the mall, the way that my teenage self would have loved to do.
You
want to buy, you know,
bringing back memories.
Yeah. I don't know what else you would spend it on, Curtis. It's really, Applebee's and the mall are really the only things.
That's the only two places I go to.
What about responsible things like groceries?
No.
Okay.
If you have a bill to pay, but if you want to have fun and go to Applebee's, your neighborhood bar and grill. This is not a sponsor.
We're just giving him so much advertising.
What am I
Cut
doing?
The check.
Let's get to Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll talked with Salk and Danny this morning. Let's go ahead and get started right here. This offense is going to be the story of the offseason. Yeah, there might be questions we have on defense, but you've got a new offensive coordinator. You had a quarterback who was making noise. And so, of course, that's where you start when it comes to questions for the head coach. Let's go to cut number one. Here's what Pete Carroll had to say about what he hopes to see from this year's offense.
I just think that the details that he brings in the continuity of the entire system is really sharp, and the fact that Russell is in on it and Geno, they can execute it and call the stuff at the line of scrimmage and all the things we have to do. I just think you'll see us play faster. I'm hoping that we'll really protect the quarterback better. That's one of the things that we're trying to do with our rhythm of things. When we're at our best, Russell's really quick with the football, and so that's been a big focus for us.
All right. Protecting the quarterback, revolutionary stuff. Cut number two, Pete Carroll says getting the ball out quickly, also a focus.
To me, it is about it's about getting the ball out. And so that means the execution and what you're asking the quarterback to do in terms of the style of throws for timing purposes. You know, I would like us to be really quick in obvious passing situations and really rhythmical which we always want to be, but I think we're the furthest along we've been at this point.
That to me is really critical when you talk about outlining and detailing the offense about what it's going to be. Obviously, tempo continues to be a topic of conversation. And what I also want to reiterate to people is that the way that they go about tempo is really unique and really special. Every offensive system has tried to, and especially in the NFL, has tried to recreate an aspect of the college game. How can we go fast? How can we continue to put pressure on defenses? How can we do that and still remain in our offense? And it's been really challenging. Some have been able to have spurts where they've been able to do it well. There are lots of teams that have tried and failed. But what's really unique to what Sean McVay, that Rams system, what Shane Waldron is bringing to the table with this group is a sophisticated package in terms of being able to stay within your offensive scheme, have a variety of different ways to create the illusion of tempo and being able to play at a fast pace while also not being outside of yourself and having to be in this 2-minute spread offense type of attack. you're able to still be in your base stuff and still run the majority of your offense in tempo. And I think that's really critical. Why also is tempo a thing that pops up a lot, Stace, is because when you talk about getting the ball out of your hands, when you talk about what this offense has struggled to do over the years and what I talked about in the offseason is the fact of creating layups. It's really easy. It's easier to create layups, meaning easy completions, run after catch completions, short completions, getting your quarterback on naked bootlegs and getting him out on the edge. It's a lot easier to do when you're able to operate with great tempo and when you're able to keep a defense on the field and not allow them to sub on and off the field and have them gassed. It allows you to do a lot of those things that this offense has never done here in the past 10 years, and it's an exciting development.
I have a question, and it's coming to me right now, so I didn't ask you beforehand, but do you think that tempo was the number one problem specifically when it came to not a lack of an intermediate game, but a lack of a successful one or go-to with it, or do you think that it's something that Russell Wilson has genuinely struggled with?
No, I think what it mainly is there's been a lack of emphasis of it. There's been a lack of, I would say, expertise in it. It's not that Brian Schottenheimer or Daryl Bevel and their offenses, Jeremy Bates for that matter, it's not that they didn't have quick game options or quick game plays, intermediate plays. They have them in their system, but what are they experts in? What do they know best? What do they emphasize in practice? And that was never anything that they emphasized. I mean, you show up to a Seahawks practice, those weren't things that they were really practicing on and having it be something that was a part of the fundamental fabric of their program
system. They weren't really getting regular practice reps at just intermediate passing.
Not in the way that allows you to be great at it. Can you do it?
So not focus.
From time to time? Yes. Can you sprinkle it into your offensive play calling? Yes. But is it what you guys do best? And the answer was no. It wasn't a fundamental emphasis for their program. In Shane Waldron's offense, it is. It is. It doesn't mean that they're going to lose the explosive deep play action shots, because that's another element of their offense. And that's why it was interesting to hear Tyler Lockett. We'll listen to some cuts later on about him describing the offense. But that's why I think with Pete Carroll, when you're really trying to look for change, and this is something, Stacey, that you've put into major question, is Pete Carroll really looking for change, or is it just a retread of the same thing? You have questions in terms of your buy-in factor to that. Mm-hmm. Shane Waldron comes in with a completely different way of looking at it. And from an offensive perspective, it is not just about taking deep shots down the field. It is having a strong complementary short to intermediate pass game and a way for you to get those easy layups, those plays that get your playmakers the ball in their hands and allows them to be dynamic in run and yards after catch. I think that's the fun wrinkle, the fun element that you're going to see in this offense that you haven't seen before.
All right, now we didn't just talk about offensive improvements. Pete Carroll also spoke, obviously, about maybe the biggest story, nationally at least, circulating the Seahawks, and that is Jamal Adams' negotiations for a new extension. Let's start with cut number 3. This is how he was asked about that. It was, how important is Jamal Adams to you?
He's a big factor. He's such a playmaker. Kenny's done such a good job of tying him into the defense right from the moment he got here. As a coverage guy near the line of scrimmage, he's really good. As a run defender, he's really good. And as a pressure guy, he's the best in the history of the game. So he has a really wide range of stuff that he brings. Plus, the thing that I hope our fans will see, when they get to see him this year, they'll see his energy that he brings to and adds to the defense. He's very, very high-spirited and very tough and just adds a ton in that regard.
Now, obviously, that doesn't stop a lot of people from worrying, because everyone wants to know that if you make this big trade for someone, if you send 2 first-round picks and more and you bring in someone, I, a fan, want to know you got this guy here long-term. Well, cut number 4, Pete Carroll says there's no need for you to worry.
I don't know if I can help you on that, but you shouldn't be sweating it out. We're communicating really well with all of our guys. We have a number of guys that are, you know, come up on their last year of their contract, and that's always in consideration and discussion. So that's an ongoing process. John has always dealt with that.
The biggest thing that stands out to me when I hear those cuts from Pete Carroll is Jamal Adams isn't going anywhere. So anybody that is worried about the idea that Jamal Adams could come to a situation where they can't agree on a deal and they eventually let Jamal Adams walk, I don't think we're living in that world. We're not going to go down that road. The Seahawks are not going to allow that to happen. They know from a on-field perspective how important Jamal Adams is to their team. That's why they traded for him. They also realize how important he is as an emotional leader for this team, and they've been down this road before. Having a big dynamic conversation about contracts isn't something that's new to this organization, to Pete Carroll, to John Schneider. Now, it is unique in terms of what is appropriate in terms of the asking price for Jamal Adams, but I have the confidence that they will get this done. They know how important this is to get done. They're not going to let this thing just totally unfurl and this relationship just completely go into a disaster mode. That's not going to happen.
Now, Pete Carroll at one point did deeply offend both Curtis Rogers and myself. Curtis Rogers
really?
And myself have been, would you say, lifelong fans of Jimmy Graham?
No.
At least until we were...
Before birth, I think.
I would say since the mid-80s, before we were born, mm-hmm. we have been fans of Jimmy Graham. And Pete Carroll, in a surprising answer, cut number 6, had this to say about which Seahawk could be a breakout player.
Oh, I think you're going to be really excited to see Gerald Everett. Gerald Everett is a guy who comes
wow.
to us from the Rams out of free agency that was acquired by the Rams when Shane was there. Shane was responsible for him, coaching him up. This is the fanciest, sweetest looking receiver tight end mix that we've had. He's like a wide receiver. He's got terrific after the catch run ability, really aggressive, and he's a good blocker too. And he knows the system inside and out.
The fanciest, Pete? Jimmy Graham was a fancy.
Jimmy Graham was
you.
Fancy.
Watching you guys freak out while this cut was playing, I'm in shock.
The definition of appalled. Look it up in a dictionary, and it's
really?
Mine and Curtis's face listening to this cut.
When I think fancy, I think Jimmy Graham.
I literally think Jimmy Graham. Yes, I do. Iggy Azalea and Jimmy Graham. Those are the two people I think of immediately when I hear the word fancy and cats. And cats for
and
fancy
not
feast.
Just fancy, but fancy tight end.
Okay.
Yeah, like a little Persian cat with like a little white fluffy
all
hair.
All right, all right. You guys pipe down for a second. You guys are getting out of control, all right?
Pete's out of control. Tell him to get in control.
I have to agree here with Pete Carroll. Now, Jimmy Graham is a unique dynamic weapon, but in terms of Gerald Everett's ability to run routes, how smooth he is, in command of the offense in terms of understanding the intricacies of what Shane Waldron wants with this group. I mean, he's sweet. And Stacey, you're saying that about Jimmy Graham, but wait till you see Gerald Everett on the field. Wait till training camp and you watch this guy run and catch. I think you're going to be...
Okay, Jake.
Wow. Okay,
I really
whatever you
do.
Say.
And if anything, this should be extremely positive news because as we talked about this before, again and again and again. It's not just the lack of production from the tight end group, but finding a guy, a legitimate third receiver, not just somebody like David Moore last year who could make big plays down the field, but finding somebody that can be a legitimate third piece to this offense that you can use in a variety of different ways is critical to this offense success.
When Andy Dalton is throwing 40 touchdowns to Jimmy Graham this year, we're all going to be kicking ourselves. Time for headlines.
He will not.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headlines.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Mariners General Manager Jerry DePoto joined Danny O'Neill and Mike Salk this morning, and he hinted that Mitch Haniger probably could be made available in a trade if it ever came down to it. So, guys, how are we rewriting this headline?
Maybe this is what the headline should say. Mariners trying bold approach of improving in 2022 by shopping their best player in 2021. It's both. real bold approach, Cotton. Let's see how it works out for you. Yeah. It's, I mean, now I will say we are going to talk about this a bit more. We're going to examine this sound later today so you guys can decide for yourself. Jerry DePoto did not say we're trading Mitch Haniger. He made it seem as though nothing is off limits for us. We value Mitch. He's our best player. That's what he said. He's our best player.
Mm-hmm.
They would be open to getting a deal done, but it's got to be a marriage on both sides. And they also would never rule out listening to deals from other teams. So that's, you know, it was like we're leaving all doors open kind of thing. Russell Wilson saying, look, I don't want to be traded, but if I was traded.
I don't know about that. I think it was as clear as day in terms of what Jerry DePoto was trying to say. We want to extend Mitch Haniger. We want to keep him around, but this is a marriage, and he has to want to stay here too. And if he's not wanting to sign an extension, then it forces us to really have to look into the trade market or potentially Mitch Haniger. Maybe it works out. Maybe it doesn't. Maybe Mitch just, you know, rides out his last year of his deal here in Seattle. But if he's not going to sign an extension, if that's what they're pushing for him to do, and he doesn't want to do it, then it does force you to have to go on the other side of it and think, what value can we get for Mitch Haniger at this point in time? I still don't like it because, as you point out, Stacey, you trade Mitch Haniger, depending on what that piece is. That better be a dang good piece. But still, when you trade him, what do you have in your outfield? And you're telling me that you're going to go and be a much better team heading into next year? You know what it really tells me? It tells me that this organization, if they trade Mitch Haniger, it will put that much more pressure on them to have to go out and spend in free agency next year. There's no option if they ended up dealing Mitch Haniger.
Headlines.
NBA playoffs, the Philadelphia 76ers blowing an 18-point lead to Atlanta and dropping Game 5. They're now down 3-2 in that series.
Oof.
Guys, what's the real headline?
Real headline is, jokes on you, analytics nerds, because Pete Carroll was actually onto something when he said the Hawks can win the game in the fourth quarter.
Can you win the game in the first quarter?
No!
Can you win the game in the second quarter?
No!
Can you win the game in the third quarter?
No!
Can you win the game in the fourth quarter?
Now,
was he talking about the Atlanta Hawks?
I think he might have been talking about the Atlanta Hawks because it hasn't always worked for the Seahawks.
Into that locker room?
Well, and one thing that the Hawks also depended on winning that game in the fourth quarter is the 76ers just completely falling apart. Completely falling apart. So in addition to the Hawks, the fourth quarter being the best, they were 16 of 22 from the field. The Philadelphia 76ers, in a typical Seahawks fashion, when you look at the box score and team stats, they kind of like ended up leading in all of them because they were so good early, and then Atlanta just came in and what did they throw down, like 40 in the fourth? Some absurd,
it was
absurd total
amount
in the fourth. But like 76ers outgained in field goal percentage, 3 points, not free throws, but like it was ridiculous. Assists, everything, and then it just decided to get tired. They decided, like, we can't wait for the next
game. A great thing on social media last night was the 76ers account at halftime tweeted out the halftime score. They were up 22 at halftime, and the caption was, I think, like, we haven't even broken a sweat yet. And
wish
you could get that one back.
Can I say,
can we go back and delete that tweet? This is one of the things that is really surprising with the 76ers is that they have been a young team, a young core, young group of young stars, and you would think at some point that they really flip the script and that they really mature. Mm-hmm. Now, they had a successful regular season, but in terms of the playoffs, these are the moments that you want to see this young core take it to the next level and really solidify themselves as true pros that you can bank on, that you can count on. And unfortunately, for whatever reason, the 76ers, Joel Embiid, former Kansas Jayhawk, Rock Chalk, baby, and Ben Simmons and this crew, they just can't seem to get out of their own way.
Headlines.
Justice Sheffield last night, not looking good, knocked around for 7 runs and only 5 innings of work. Mariners fall 7-2 in their series finale against the Twins. What's the real headline?
Man, there's no funny one for this. There's no joke for this. It's just that this is actually bad news for the Mariners rebuild. Now, I was going to say, for the Jerry DePoto hinting open to trading Haniger, who is 31, that much like Leonardo DiCaprio, Jerry DePoto open to getting younger. But I decided to I'm gonna throw in just a little bit of a funny part to this, because otherwise there's no fun. There's no fun with this. If you're looking at your soup, you're putting together your ingredients of what makes a World Series, your rotation is huge. You need great pitchers at the top, and this guy is one of them. Jared Kelnick being sent back down bothers me significantly less than Justice Sheffield seemingly regressing this year.
Oh, there is no leash.
No comparison.
There's no comparison. There's no leash for Justice Sheffield. He was an older prospect to begin with when he got called up. He had to get sent back down. Last year, it seemed like this was a complete turnaround. He's ready to take over, and he's ready to prove Jerry DePoto right, and was a piece that coming into the year I was extremely, extremely excited about in terms of solidifying this rotation and not having as many open spaces in your starting rotation that you need to fill for the future. But guys, I mean, we got to be honest. Like, Justin Dunn has overtaken Justice Sheffield. Curtis, you were saying that in our production meeting.
Where's the lie?
There is no lie. I 100% agree with you. And I think that when you looked at Justice Sheffield as of right now, I don't want to write anybody off. Maybe he can turn around the second half of the season. But as of right now, what we have seen, you can almost forget about Sheffield being a part of this rebuild. When they turn into a contender, I don't think Sheffield is a part of this rotation.
Do we think it's mental?
Yeah.
Kind of like a mental block.
I think there's a part of that that could be true, yeah. I mean, like you said, Jake, it makes no sense, too, considering the last season he had in 2020 where he was phenomenal, and the end of 2019 when he came back up after getting just rocked in AAA. He was great at the end of 2019 as well. It's so disappointing to see him have the start to the season that he's had, considering that he was building towards something really special.
Well, and so bad to the point where your Skip, he said nice things, but ultimately also said, hey, we might skip this guy's next start because of the way we can maneuver things with off days and such. We might just skip Sheffield's start. That's never a good sign.
No. Never a good sign if you're, check this out, Jake, your skipper's open to skipping your start.
Hey, we got to get to break here.
Mike Salk filled in for Paul Gallant this morning and got a chance to interview both Pete Carroll and Jerry DePoto. He's going to tell us what's sticking with him from those interviews next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Joining us now is Mike Salk, brought to you by JAPCO Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, I heard you on the morning show this morning.
It's fun. Yeah. I did 3 whole hours back in the saddle, temporarily out of retirement.
It was like old times.
My question for you is, it's been a while since you've done that. So, like, do you need a lot of recovery?
Yes.
Or you had a gas?
Yeah. Remember a few years ago, Brock practiced with, like, a high school team or something, and he was like, he was down and out for a week. Like, I'm going to need some time to recover. I need some time to my
just
voice.
A minute.
Yeah.
Well, it was.
I'm old man. I used to be.
An especially great Danny and Gallant show featuring Mike Salk, because you guys had two very important guests.
Yeah. Yeah. Me and Brock were both on the show in the same. No,
that's not what I meant. No, you had Jerry DePoto
and Pete Carroll all in one show. I lucked into that one, by the way. How about that?
Yeah. Well,
talk about being a vulture.
No kidding.
No, I'll come in. It's Pete and Jerry? Yeah, I'll be there. Sure. Yeah, no problem.
Well, it's also perfect timing because it means that you get to come on our show and we get to immediately ask you about what those interviews were like and what stood out. So let's start with DePoto.
All right, let's start with Jerry. Biggest thing, and we spent a while on J.P. Crawford, who we've been talking about a lot when we've had our conversations and raving. They did not know that he was the kind of leader that he's become. They knew he was they thought he was going to be a great hitter, but didn't know that he had the glove that he's developed and didn't realize he had the leadership skills that he's developed. So kudos to them for finding a guy and developing into what he's been so far. But we talked a little bit about Logan Gilbert, which I thought would be relevant for you guys because we've had that kind of back and forth, what happened at the beginning versus now.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really interesting that Jerry pointed to his intelligence and said, look, this is part of the reason we drafted and developed this kid. He's one of the smartest young pitchers I've been around. And I think you see that when he's able to make the adjustment as quickly as he did from getting bombed a little bit in his first couple of starts. And we talked about that fastball, not fooling many bats and out in the middle of the plate, to figuring out what he needs to do to adjust to this league and not waiting a year to do it, doing it almost instantly. you could make a case that that's almost a better sign than Gilbert coming up and dominating immediately. Because the guys who do that, maybe it's like a Steve Cishek guy.
Where you're worried, like, it's luck.
Well, where you're worried it's a funky delivery. Yeah. And once guys figure it out, like, okay, well, you did your funky delivery thing. Now they know how to beat you and you're gone. It's like, you know, in a video game where you figure out the trick to beating whatever game it is. Like, okay, well, now I've got the trick figured out. The fact that Gilbert is able to get by not just with good stuff, but with guile and smarts, I think probably a really good sign for his future.
I think that that's a tremendous sign, and that's why, honestly, it's not because of intelligence or smarts or I know what I'm looking at. I was actually really surprised initially when you came out of the gate and were like, oh, I'm kind of nervous about Logan Gilbert. I'm like, wait, but he hasn't had a lot of time cooked up, right, and ready to go heading into the moment. And that's kind of what I was hoping is that he would turn into that guy that could develop over time. But you made me nervous because you've been around the game a lot and you were nervous right from the get-go.
But I'm going off of what I had heard about. I mean, it's not like I'd watched the kid pitch before he made it to the majors. What I'd heard was funky delivery will immediately fool big leaguers. Okay. And it didn't. What we have no idea about watching a guy pitch, watching a guy hit, is how smart they are. How would we know? Right. I mean, like, we can see whether or not the fastball is 95 or 92. You can see how hard the curve breaks. You can see the guy swing we are all capable of watching that with our eyes.
Right.
I don't know whether the kid's smart or not. I don't know whether he's a dummy. But it turns out and when Jerry talks about it, like, oh, that's part of the package with Logan Gilbert. I think that's a super encouraging sign.
Do GMs like guys like that because they feel it's easier to explain a lot of the analytics behind?
Well, Jerry probably does because that's how he was.
Just a right? nerd.
Yeah, I mean, Jerry's always a smart pitcher. So, yeah, I'm sure they like smart pitchers because those guys, like, I think
they just talk about documentaries in between.
Yes, exactly. Like, and really obscure ones, too.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
No, I think that, like, I think smart pitchers especially are pretty valuable for your team. And I think when we've talked about some of the all-time greats, it's usually not just great stuff. It's an ability to think through the game that really, really sets them apart.
Now, there was something that was kind of surprising when it came to Mitch Haniger. What did you make of the non-committal answer?
He gone.
You think so?
See you later. That's what I got out of it. I mean, obviously Jerry's not saying that outright. But he sure didn't make it sound like they were interested or negotiating any kind of long-term extension and that he would at least be open to the right deal, which isn't that surprising. I mean, they were open to dealing Mitch a couple of years ago. It ended up kind of falling through. So it's not that surprising that he would be a potential trade guy. Jerry's still looking to build this thing long-term. However, I'll keep saying this. If I'm Jerry DePoto, I'm not trading Mitch Haniger right now. Not until you sign me to a long-term deal.
Well, no, but you don't.
Sign me, then I'll trade Mitch Haniger because then I'm willing to do what's best for the franchise.
But
until then, I'm not. Why do I care what's going to happen here in 3 years? You won't commit to me for a contract, but I'm supposed to commit to the Mariners and what's in their best interest in 3 years? Sign me.
No, very true, first. But second, what are you doing? Who do you have in the outfield right now that you feel comfortable with when you're supposed to be starting to contend, not contending next year, but you're starting to get on that path?
Yeah.
Who do you have?
Unfortunately, Haniger's yet to play full seasons. I mean, he's a good player.
It's true.
But I don't know that the trust factor can be there to commit to a long-term extension.
It's even worse past that. Fraley hasn't played a season.
But you're about to enter an offseason where you're going to have your pick of some. I mean, you're able to go spend that money somewhere else. The fact that you choose not to spend it on Haniger doesn't mean that the money evaporates. I mean, there's plenty of ways to get this.
Well,
out.
I'm sure they're wondering.
Sure hope you're right.
I'm sure they're wondering, too, whether, like, is this the best version of Haniger we're going to see? Because I found it interesting that Haniger at 30, 31, DePoto was basically like, well, I mean, what is age? Like, he's really in his prime. And it's like, well, you guys, though, it sounds like your window has been moved back. So Mitch Haniger at 31, how is he going to be versus Mitch Haniger in 2023 when you're really pushing to contend and you wish you could have had someone else?
When you're starting to put your house on the market and you start talking about how great it is, right?
Yeah,
like,
no,
this
exactly.
house isn't old. It was built in
31,
a classical
but he has a young soul. He's got the soul of a 26-year-old.
Local Seattleites will write, like, when we lived in a townhouse years, it was it's the first house we bought here. And when it was kind of right in between Finney and Greenwood.
Yeah.
And when we bought it, they were like, well, it cost X. And we're like, we're not paying that. It's in Greenwood. And then when we sold it,
jokes
we were
on,
like, hey, you're going to have to pay this. This is Finney.
So like, there's a zoo here,
right? I mean, like, there's a you can change your view on what the prime is depending on whether you're buying or selling.
Can we also get to Carol? You want to start that one?
Yeah.
I want to make sure we talk about it.
I guess the biggest one is what stood out to you the most when it came to talking with Carol.
Well, I mean, when you give a coach an open-ended question, right? Like, hey, who's gonna pop this year? I think their answers are generally fairly telling. And he went with Gerald Everett. I mean, that isn't necessarily the first name I expected him. I thought Pete would go with a defensive player, but you know, to go with Gerald Everett, all right, that's a big part of Shane Waldron's offense. And kind of talking through what that's going to mean, we asked him about Waldron specifically and how his offense will look different to a common fan like me, an idiot. And his first word was tempo, which to me is great. It means they won't have to call a bunch of stupid timeouts in the second half because they'll also already be at the line of scrimmage ready to go before there's 4 seconds on the clock.
We can only hope.
We can only hope. So tempo, all right, now I have that to note. Gerald Everett, tight ends are going to be involved. The last thing he said that stood out to me is that they're going to protect Russ better. And when we asked him about Waldron, he said one of the things that will stand out is that we should protect the quarterback better. So Pete knows talking points. He knows what's important this year. And I agree with him. Protecting your quarterback offensively is about as important as it gets for this team.
What do you think the contrast was? Because it was on your show with Brock and Salk a couple years ago where Pete Carroll, in training camp, you guys are talking about offense, talking about how you know, he wants to attack, and he said, I don't want no dink and dunk offense.
Right.
That's his words. Now he's kind of saying a little bit of a different tune.
I haven't heard him say we want a dink and dunk.
No, he isn't saying that, but when it comes to protection, one of the things that he said was we need to get the ball out of his hands. Salk, you're not getting the ball out of your hands if you're constantly trying to take shots down the field.
Yeah, well, but what he's saying is we need to do a better job protecting him, not necessarily that we have to dink and dunk. I know that Tyler Lockett talked about how the offense has a little more short and intermediate stuff. You know, you mentioned the both Pete and Jerry, but talking to Brock I thought was informative today also, and him saying, look, they've always had that stuff in there. It's not like they didn't have short and intermediate plans. It just wasn't necessarily the focus of their game plan. But when you look at Russ's history, that really hasn't been his strength. It wasn't his strength at UNC when it was the West Coast offense under Dana Bible. And when he was, you know, he threw a lot of picks and came with some success, but there were a lot more picks. When you look at Russ in the NFL with the Seahawks, how many of his, and I'm just quoting Brock here, how many of his big picks and big interceptions have come in the flat, have come on little hooks, have come in the short and intermediate game, which isn't necessarily a strength. Doesn't mean he can't do it. But what makes Russ special to me is ability to be cautious with the football, be escapable with his legs, make big plays when it matters, hit the deep ball, and then at the end of the game, he's just flat out better than you.
He is Mike Salk, joins us every weekday at 11:30. And you guys, if you want to hear either of those interviews, they were on Danny and Gallant this morning. You can download it wherever you download your podcasts or check out 710sports.com. Hit the podcast page. You can find it there. Thanks, Mike.
See you guys.
Tyler Lockett is the latest Seahawks offensive player to give new OC Shane Waldron a glowing review, but are we buying it? Are you buying it? We'll play you the sound he had to say next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. He's Jake Heaps, I'm Stacey Rost, and we got some more sound for you. It's not just Pete Carroll. As a reminder, though, we played you that sound this morning from Pete Carroll's interview with Danny and Gallant / Mike Salk filling in for Paul earlier this morning. Pete Carroll also going to speak to reporters at 1 p.m. You're going to get to hear from the Seahawks head coach twice today, so stick around for that. We'll take you there live. Before we get to it, Tyler Lockett was speaking with reporters from minicamp yesterday. We'll play you some of what he had to say. Here's what you need to know about what he had to say about Shane Waldron. So let's start with cut number 7. This is his description of Waldron.
You know, I think he's very brilliant. I think the things that he brings to our team is going to really help us out a lot. And when it comes to just learning his offense, like I said, once you study it, you're able to see exactly what type of offense we're going to be. You're able to see everything that we're going to do. And so, like I said, since I've been here, I've been really excited about it, just kind of picking his brain, understanding that he's also a coordinator that wants to learn. And it's really cool when you have that. You know, I've had that with the others as well. And so when you have people that are willing to learn and willing to continue to get better each and every day with you, you're able to grow with that person. And so since Shane came in, I mean, everybody's been picking it up. Everybody's been doing a great job.
It's almost like you hear brilliant, smart. You hear all these incredible adjectives when it comes to Shane Waldron. Is this guy slipping his players like $20 bills before they go to the interview?
Here's the thing. It's not that I don't believe that players are having a great experience so far learning this new playbook or being excited about what they can do. Like, every single player out there, I'm sure, wants to be better, wants to dive deeper into the game. And so for an offensive player learning a new playbook, that's got to be kind of fun, right? But it is one of those things where I'm like, man, we haven't seen it yet, though. So it's hard not to feel like it's that time of the year. I mean, you see it all around the league, right? You heard Shaquille Griffin saying that Trevor Lawrence looks amazing when he's like barely been practicing because he's being careful with an injury. Like, it's just that time of the year where you say everything right about your team. We're going to win a Super Bowl this year. Everything's looking right. And so I want to believe a lot of what guys are saying, but when you have yet to see it, you can only take their word for it. So I don't know. I mean, it's a rookie OC. It's a lot to ask. Jake, you have more faith than I do.
I have more faith because I have more experience in this particular situation. I've talked with Shane Waldron. I've met the guy. I've been able to see behind the scenes what this offense looks like, and it's all real. I mean, it's not like Booby Miles where he's coming out and says, you know, hype for stuff that's not real. I'm all real, right? I think with Shane Waldron, this isn't something to be that's part of a hype machine, because hype gets exposed. Hype gets exposed when it comes to crunch time. This is something that is sustainable. This is something that is a positive for this organization. And when you have Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, Will Disley, you have all these guys having rave reviews about this offense. One of the things that stands out the most to me is not just saying how brilliant and how smart Shane Waldron is, because he is. He really impresses. When you get a chance to talk ball with him and you get to talk to him about his process, his philosophy, I mean, he really, really has a firm grasp and sense of who he is, what he wants to accomplish, what he envisions this offense being. But this is the part that, listening to Tyler Lockett talk, this is where it all comes together, and this is why these guys are so excited here in cut number 8.
We have more freedom to do a lot of stuff. I mean, it's very different than the 6 years that I've been here. But the biggest thing that I've learned since being here in the league is it doesn't matter what team you go to, doesn't matter who your offensive coordinator is. The biggest thing that you need as a player that I've learned is you have to be able to adapt. And that's one of the biggest things that I've learned is some receiver coaches, they didn't like how I ran routes. Other coaches did like how I ran routes. And so with the offense that Shane brings in, I think it brings us more freedom. More freedom to kind of be able to be the receivers that we can be. We got free range to do a lot of stuff. Not saying that we could just go out there and do whatever we want, but the more and more sophisticated that you become in this offense, the more you're able to understand how you can switch your feet, how not to switch your feet, how to add an extra step, how not to add an extra step, rather than always just having to get to a certain point at this certain amount of time.
So let me parse that for you, because that's a lot of detail that Tyler just threw at you. Basically, as you get more comfortable with this offense, it's more about feel. It's more about how can you get to the spot on time and how are you getting to that spot, more so than saying, here is the line drawn on paper and this is exactly how you have to do it. This is the exact spot. No matter what, you don't get to play football. What I mean by that is at some point, you have to abandon what it says on paper just a little bit, or deviate just a little bit, because you're playing the game, because you're looking for open space. You have to adjust to what is the defense is presenting to you and how to get to these open spaces. It's not just that. It's the adaptability of this offense. It's the ability of this offense to look at it and not just, you know, a young guy like Dwayne Eskridge or Colby Parkinson or some of these young guys. True veterans that understand this game saying, this is a well-rounded offense. We experienced a major low last year, Stace, in terms of how we played, and a huge part of that was the lack of ability to adjust. We feel like we are entering an offense with Shane Waldron that has all the pieces that can make this offense well-rounded and that we can adjust, we can adapt, and we can expand what we do and still be able to successfully march down the field and not lose our identity.
Jake's got more to say about Tyler's comments coming up in Four Down Territory. And by the way, your chance to win a $250 Visa gift card coming up in Four Down Territory. We are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. Justin Dunn and the Mariners begin a four-game series against the Rays tonight at T-Mobile Park. Pregame begins at 6 p.m. First pitch is at 7:10 p.m. on 710 ESPN Seattle. Additional important note here. Your boy Curtis Rogers will be hosting pre- and post-game tonight.
True.
Tune
Can
in
confirm.
To hear At A Kid From Kent.
Man.
And that's Around the Diamond brought to you by
you
Shane Company,
be there.
Your friend in the jewelry business. You're going to like the way you look. I guarantee it. Speaking of Mariners, Root Sports' Aaron Goldsmith joins us next. Don't go anywhere.